I call the meeting of the House of Higher Education to Finance and Policy Division to order. Members, please take your seats. We have a quorum is present. And is there a motion to approve the minutes for February 20th, 2019?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Vang. The minutes, Representative Vang moves approval of the minutes for February 20th, 2019. Any discussion? Yes, Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, I had a clarification on that I spoke to you earlier.
It was
and that'll be technically taken care of?
Yeah, well, we'll check into it and see. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And then, so those opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for February 20, 2019 have been approved. Okay, so now in the interest of time with and respect to the people who have shown up to testify today, I'll ask members to save their questions until after our testifiers have had a chance to present their testimony. The first item on the agenda is House File 550. Representative Pryor, would you like, I'll have you move your bill when you get up to the testifying desk.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, I am Lori Pryor, and I would like to move my bill, House File 550, for possible inclusion.
Okay.
Layover, to be layover.
Okay. Thank you. So now we can move on. Would you like to do your opening? Excuse me one second. Hold on one second. Okay, so we'll do your author amendment first to get into the order that you would like your bill. Do you have the...
Yes, I would...
18-0037?
Yes, I would like to move my amendment, please.
Okay, so Representative Pryor moves amendment A-19-0037. Did you want to talk to it? Did you want to talk to the bill, or is it just pretty... the amendment? Or just, is it okay with members if we just get her bill in order and then talk
and
to the bill?
I apologize. I picked up my, I think I left the amendment up there at the desk.
We'll get it.
There we are. Thank you.
So we're just going to, if members don't mind, we're just going to get your bill in the order the author would like and then move into the testimony for your
And I
bill.
I can, maybe on then if we can move the amendment and then
we'll
I'll just discuss them together.
Yep, that would be great. So those in favor of the motion to amend the bill with A-19-0037, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Pryor, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So House File 550, what we're trying to do in this bill is address what we know is going on right now. We've heard in our districts that students have loan debt, and this bill serves to help students with the debt by helping them understand the financing of the debt and to educate them about options that they have for that student debt that they have. I mean, it could be that one set of a loan different than the original one that they have that's available to them will be easier for them to pay off. So this is a program that has been piloted before and was successful. And what we're looking for success is that students are not defaulting on their debt. As we know, if you're young, if you have to default on a debt, that's something that will follow you around for a long time to come. So this House file just helps students with counseling about student loan debt. So it does not take away their debt, but it helps them, puts them in a better position for paying off their debt once those loans have been incurred. The amendment does two things. The second part of the amendment, the page 2, 1.3, that just is a, it's a technical amendment. It's a better way of describing the counselors that the students would be working with. And then the first part of the amendment, 1.2 on page 1, what it's talking about is it's people that live in, it's students that are in Minnesota now. So it's possible that they've had some of their education for which they've incurred debt in other states, but they're in Minnesota now. And those are the students that are former students that we're serving to help. So this bill would create a, would give a grant, and that grant would be awarded to an organization that can do this counseling. And I would like to turn it over to my testifiers to describe more in detail about how this would work.
Thank you. And will Cherish Holland start? Or okay.
Yes.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and who you are with.
All right. My name is Becky Pacarinen. Cherish was not able to make it today, so I'm here in her place, and this is my first time testifying.
Okay. Well, I'll just give you a tip. Just talk through the chair when you know, Madam Chair, and then I'll give you permission to, like, answer the questions when people ask you. But we're going to save the questions for the end. Okay. So we will help you through this.
All right. And I also wanted to say happy birthday.
Well, thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Okay. So I got the Becky Pacarinen?
Pacarinen.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. All right, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Becky Pacarinen, and I started out as a financial counselor and worked my way up through financial counseling and recently been promoted to the Senior Program Director at Lutheran Social Service Financial Counseling out of the Brainerd office. I've worked for LSS for over 11 years and love my job helping people regain control of their finances. I would like to thank Representative Pryor for being the chief author of the House File 550, as well as the co-authors, Representatives Haley, Bernardi, Nornes, Lean, Daniels, and also all other supporting committee members. Thank you for allowing us time to share our experience working with Minnesotans who are struggling with student loan debt. LSS Financial Counseling has been providing financial counseling statewide in our local communities in every county of Minnesota for over 30 years and has specifically been providing student loan repayment counseling since 2012. Over 10,000 Minnesotans from all walks of life and all income levels access our services. And as you may already know, you don't have to be Lutheran to access them. My LSS financial counseling coworkers and I are committed to giving people the tools and encouragement they need to take charge of their finances. We provide a holistic approach to personal finance. Yes, you may be coming to us with concerns about student loan payments, but we'll help you look at your overall budget and how all those payments fit into the big picture. We understand that looking at any financial issues in a silo just doesn't work. Over the past 10 years, we've been seeing increasing numbers in Minnesotans struggling with student loan debt. When you think of student loan borrowers, you may be picturing your 20-something niece or nephew. Yes, that demographic has student loan debt, but the fastest growing group that has educational debt are older adults. This is because many returned to college during the Great Recession when unemployment was high. Fast forward 10 years, and many of these student loan borrowers are looking forward to retirement and realize they can't because they'll have large sums of student loan payments. The other reason student loan debt is skyrocketing in older adults is because parents and grandparents are co-signing private loans for their loved ones to attend college. They are not going to college, but in co-signing, they're taking full responsibility for the student loan debt. Student loan debt is keeping many Minnesotans from being able to reach their other life financial goals, including not being able to purchase a home, putting off having children, starting a business, and delaying retiring. According to a study published last month by the Federal Reserve, student loan debt is impacting people's choice to live in rural communities. The study showed rural students borrowers were more likely to leave rural areas than areas who did not borrow. According to the Federal Department of Education, there were 12,441 Minnesotans who defaulted on their student loans in 2015, which is the last year information was available. Defaults or even late payments can destroy a borrower's financial future. Student loan defaults can also lead to wage garnishment, which reduces income and increases financial stress on borrowers. However, with appropriate counseling, nearly all of those defaults could have been prevented. We have found that Minnesotans need a trusted place to turn to receive a specific plan for managing their student loans debt and how that plan relates to the rest of their financial goals. In an effort to respond to and get ahead of the situation, we have increased our counselors' training and education regarding student loan debt and repayment options. We have also increased the overall number of our counselors who have a specific expertise and are certified as student loan repayment counselors. In 2015, the Minnesota Legislature created a two-year pilot to serve Minnesotans struggling with student loan debt. LSS was selected through a competitive request for proposal process, and we started serving student loan borrowers through this program in the fall of 2015. During the pilot program, LSS Financial Counseling served 1,673 people through student loan repayment counseling. Our financial counselors saw firsthand the great relief borrowers experienced after having a trusted resource to turn to. 85% of people reported they have felt more confident regarding repayment after having an appointment with LSS Financial Counseling. We hear countless times, "I wish I would have heard about LSS Financial Counseling sooner." Over 500 of the borrowers that we served were over 60 days past due on their student loans. Many of those were in default. We know these default rates are statistically higher in first-generation borrowers and also for borrowers of color, and we have been working and will continue to work to reach out to these communities. Through student loan repayment counseling, almost $13 million in student loans were brought back into good standing. This had a huge impact on these Minnesotans' credit score and overall financial wellness. At the beginning of the student loan repayment appointments, our counselors sit back and listen to what a person's financial goals and priorities are. Often during this time, we hear about their financial stressors as well. We assist in creating a livable budget and look at their overall financial picture. We help prioritize debt, especially student loan debt. We can help borrowers look at income-based repayment options on their federal student loans. We coach borrowers on how to talk with lenders, and it will even help call collections during the appointment. We can do all of this through in-person or phone counseling with any resident in Minnesota. Allow me to share one participant's thanks for helping to resolve their default through student loan repayment counseling. My counselor was very professional, helpful, and friendly. I would have not been able to navigate my student loans without them. I went from being in serious default to being able to get them under control and be more manageable and affordable. I'm very grateful. As I'm sure you're hearing about or have personal experiences with, student loan debt can be overwhelming financial difficulty to overcome. We appreciate the work this committee is doing to reduce student debt and support borrowers in getting back on track with their student loans. The student loan repayment counseling that the legislature has supported in the past is a proven, trusted, and an effective way to enable Minnesotans to get back on track with their student debt so they can move forward with their goals they sought out higher education for in the first place. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And now Julie Anna Keene will be testifying.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Shannon Doyle, one of our financial counselors, was planning on being here today to share some stories of borrowers that she has worked with. She got food poisoning this morning or woke up with food poisoning, so I'm here to read her testimony. If we, depending on how much time we have, I was going to share two stories of borrowers that we've worked with.
Sure.
Does that sound okay? Great. So again, my name is Juliana Keene. Here are two stories that illustrate some of the work that Becky was talking about. One client that we recently served, I'm going to call her Ruth, is a retired single woman whose Social Security was being garnished by the Department of Treasury for defaulting on federal loans she thought had been paid off 10 years earlier. For the record, the federal government has the power to garnish up to 15% of an individual's Social Security income for defaulted student loans. Ruth's loans defaulted because there was a servicer error in applying payments. She'd actually thought that they had been paid off and had not been notified of this error. With accrued interest and fees, the $2,000 loan grew to $6,000. Not a large amount, but enough for a garnishment to create a true hardship for her. She was behind 3 months on her mortgage payment when she came to us due to garnishment. Fortunately, our counselor was able to help Ruth through this situation. Our counselor put together a request for hearing with the Department of Education to get the garnishment lifted. This is a complicated process and detailed and onerous that requires much documentation. And I won't go into all of the details, but it's quite a process. With the help of a LSS student loan repayment counselor, Ruth completed the request with the Department of Education, had that hearing, and was able to lift garnishment for a year. She worked with an LSS housing counselor then, this is outside the student loan repayment counseling, to catch up with her mortgage lender and save her home from foreclosure. Now Ruth will be applying for a rehabilitation on her student loan, and that will be $5 a month minimum payment, and after 10 months she will be back into good standing with her loan. So she is now back on track with her goals. I'd also like to share with you about Bruce and Kathy. Again, not the real names, but they are a young couple from Redwood Falls, Minnesota. Bruce was a first-generation college student who borrowed about $16,000 to complete his education at a technical college. He defaulted when he was laid off from work, and the federal loans went unpaid for 9 months. He didn't know this at the time, but he could have qualified for an unemployment deferment, but wasn't informed of that option. He tried for several years to get them back on track, only to continually get the runaround from the collection agency who was holding the loans. When he first came to our office, he was not sure whether the loans were federal or private. This is very common, I'm sure Becky could tell you. And they went through a long process to figure that out and where they originated from. When he spoke with the collection agency, they insisted it was a private loan. In the past, they had demanded payment in full, but together they were able to work out a payment of at least $5 a month to keep the loan in good standing. Based on our knowledge of students' loans, this appeared to be more than a federal loan rehabilitation, and it was something more that looked like what a private loan company would offer, except Bruce and Kathy were able to pay the $5 for 2 years, and the loan hadn't been rehabilitated, and it had grown larger, and the interest fees accrued. I know this is really complicated, but I just am giving you there's a lot more detail, a little bit of a sense of what our counselors are working with. So they were able to work with Bruce and Kathy, get them set up with a payment plan, figure out through the National Student Loan Data Services website what was going on with their loans. This is a great resource. I think I've talked to you, with some of you about that. And they were, again, able to get Bruce and Kathy back on track with their loans. And they're now in good standing, have affordable payment, and they're able to move forward with their goals around home ownership and starting a family. These are just two stories of over 1,000 people LSS worked with on student loan debt counseling, but represent common stories we hear every day. Navigating the ins and outs can be extremely overwhelming. While we have been able to provide this service on a case-by-case basis with donations from LSS donors and partnerships with community foundations, we haven't been able to provide full statewide coverage, and so we really appreciate Representative Pryor and all the co-authors and many of you who've offered support for this bill for moving this forward. Thank you for your time. We're happy to answer, or Becky really is happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Juliana Keene. Okay. We have a couple questions. Representative Lean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not a question. I just wanted to make a couple comments on the bill. Representative Pryor, I appreciate you bringing this forward. I used to work for a nonprofit credit counseling organization, not Lutheran Social Services, a different one. And so I certainly know the value, firsthand, of what financial counseling, debt counseling can do for people. I really want to point out lines 1.17, 1.18, talking about developing a workable budget for people. I think that's something that we should be talking about with kids at the junior high school level, certainly some of those early years in college, regardless of if they have debt issues, student debt issues, or what. I just think it's something a lot of people could benefit from. So really appreciate you bringing this bill forward. Thank you.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think there probably was a bit of a bubble of need. Wasn't there a for-profit school that lost accreditation? A lot of the attendees had student loans, were in a tough situation. And my understanding is that a lot of the, or some of the for-profit entities tended to have a higher debt burden with their students. What I'm curious about is, anyone extended or thought of extending some pre-education to, I would think, any graduating high school senior should have a little bit of a heads up about, you know, student loans and financial education beforehand, and maybe an idea of what they pick, they could actually make enough money to pay off the loan.
Representative Pryor.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, you probably would be interested in Representative Herr's bill, which requires financial literacy, promotes financial literacy in high school right now, and I think that's kind of along the line of what you're talking about. And I signed on as a co-signer of that bill because I agree with you. Understanding your debt before you incur it is the first step, but just, you know, as it pertains to this bill too, as we heard in the testimony, it can get pretty complicated. And so I'm glad that I didn't have to. I don't have any student debt, and I'm glad to say that. But I agree with the sentiment that you have now, and I think that we should keep looking at financial literacy and have it before as much as possible.
Representative Runbeck, sir, final question here.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, how much does one counseling session cost? And then, by extension, I guess, how much are you looking for in terms of an appropriation? Therefore, how many people do you expect to serve?
Ms. Packerinden?
The average cost is about $125 per session, just to provide the counseling and keep the training up. And we have a we're asking for different levels of funding here, depending on what the impact is. You know, we can impact 1,000 borrowers for $150,000 annually, or $1,600 for $250,000, $2,400 for $375,000. The cost goes up a little bit the more we serve, just because it's going to require more outreach, more education, and we found that it is actually really hard to get into the colleges to get this information to them, because there's so many other things coming at them. So it does take a lot of concentrated effort and outreach to get the information out there.
And I'll add that $120 that this is based on covers part of the cost. Oh, sorry. Sorry, thank you. That covers part of the cost of counseling, but we contribute a lot of the other overhead and pieces, but that would be the contribution.
Okay, I guess we do have one more question, and then we will ask if there's other testifiers in the audience. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to that question, the $125 you just referenced, is that a cost that is charged to the student that's engaging in the counseling? That's just the cost of the session that you're incurring. Mm-hmm. Okay, then, Madam Chair, I guess the question is, did I do the math right? I was looking through the documents that were handed out here. I think it was FY 15 and 16, so it was $150,000 per year. So it was $300,000 for the biennium, correct? Mm-hmm. I'm seeing it ahead. And then it was 16, and then I divided by 16, I came up with a cost of $179 on average per student. So then can I assume then that the $54 is your overhead, the difference between the 179 and the 125 you referenced?
Okay, so who would like to answer that?
I would.
Okay, go ahead, and it is, get it right here, Ms. Packerinden.
Very good. That was the. We only report the number of individual clients served, but the borrowers come back for a second appointment. That was also covered in there for the extra charge. So a lot of times people came in and met with us one time. We helped them figure out how to pull their reports, figure out who they owe, and then maybe start the process. But a lot of these people we met with more than one time. It was multiple appointments. So that we didn't actually We actually didn't make any money on it. It helped cover the cost to provide the service because we believe it's such an important service that we can't draw the line on that. But a lot of those are multiple appointments, usually about two per borrower just because it's so complex.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And I had told members that we are going to move to testifiers in the audience. And so is there anyone who would like to testify to this bill, for or against? Okay. With that, is hearing no further discussion, Representative Pryor, go ahead. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't hear. So I'm just going to let members know that we are going to schedule a meeting after for this evening, and hopefully we'll be able to get through our other four bills in the hour that we have remaining, but otherwise we'll reconvene. We'll either finish, go on later, or we'll finish later on. Okay, go ahead, Representative Franson.
On the managed loan repayment, if you are helping manage a loan for said student, are you also getting a cut of that sum? In some instances, there are loan counselings that the individual thinks they're making payments, but the counselor is actually grabbing a big portion of that payment.
Ms. Who wants?
We are not taking any of it. Whatever, we don't actually take any money from them. We just help them figure out who they owe, what makes the most sense in their situation, and help them get their payments set up. But we don't actually take any money from them, so 100% is going from them to their payment.
And Madam Chair, if I may,
yes,
add to that answer.
Prior.
And so specifically this bill would set up a grant that would be given to a nonprofit agency for doing this work, and that would be part of the criteria for receiving the grant is that, that they're not right.
Okay, Representative.
Not trying to exploit the student.
Representative Pryor, do you have any final comments about your bill?
No, Madam Chair. Just thank you, members, for hearing the bill, and I hope that we were able to act on it favorably.
Okay, so hearing no further discussion, Representative Pryor renews her motion that House File 550, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Finance Omnibus Bill. The bill is laid over. Okay, so now we have, if we want to be able to leave on time, we have four bills remaining, and we will have just a little less than 15 minutes available for each of the bills. Otherwise, we can go longer or come back this evening. But let's hopefully members would like to finish as quickly as possible. Representative Huat, did I say that right?
No.
No, darn it. That's terrible. I apologize. Hewitt. Hewitt. It's Hugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hewitt, the second.
Hewitt, I got it right. Yeah, sorry. I was practicing that yesterday, too, and I just totally blew it.
So I feel honored you're practicing.
Yeah, right. I appreciate you being here today, and would you like to, somebody on the committee, I think I'll just move. I'll move the Hewitt. No, Hewitt. Hewitt, gal, wow. This is terrible. I move the author's amendment to, So I will move House File 583 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Finance Omnibus Bill. You may, and then I'd also will move your amendment to get it in the order that the author would like. I move author's amendment to H0583A1 to put the bill in the form that the author wants. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Hewitt, please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee, for hearing this bill today. This bill comes to me through a constituent in saying, please get the kid out of my basement. As a realtor, I've seen this come up over and over again. And these individuals with the debt of student loans that end up in less desirable credit situations can't move. I mean, they can't get an apartment, they can't get a car to work, and they definitely can't buy a brand new house. So that's kind of what this bill does, is opens up our borrowing practices in this. And what I'd like to do, Madam Chair, if it's okay, I'd like to bring down the staff from the state on this to get into the weeds of this bill a little bit more.
Okay, that would be great. Ms. Grimes, will you be starting or will somebody else be starting? Okay. If you could please say your name and who you're with and proceed with your testimony, that would be great.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Marilyn Kozier, and I manage the SELF and SELF Refi programs for the Office of Higher Education. The SELF Refi program started in 2016 to help Minnesota residents refinance their student loans. The program serves graduates of post-secondary institutions who are working and are interested in refinancing loans. Reasons for refinancing can include a lower monthly payment as a result of a lower interest rate and or a longer repayment term, or to save money on interest by either reducing the rate and or the repayment term, wanting to work with one lender instead of receiving multiple bills per month, or to release a cosigner on an existing loan. Self-refi does not receive any general fund money and is currently prohibited from doing so under 136A-1701. House File 583 amends the statute to provide an appropriation for a bad debt reserve to expand eligibility. The bill as proposed could be implemented through modifications to the existing refi program. However, the timing depends on the loan servicer's availability to incorporate this project in with other projects for various lenders. We anticipate it could be 6 to 12 months, depending on the scope of changes to be made. We estimate $25 million in loans could be issued per year based on this $5 million annual appropriation to the Special Bad Debt Reserve. However, we would monitor delinquencies and defaults to determine if that volume is appropriate. A provision in the bill allows the office to pledge the annual appropriation to bonds so that the office can secure funding for these student loans. We need this language because rating agencies utilize very stringent cash flow assumptions. For example, in our most recent issuance, they assumed at least 70% of loans with a cosigner FICO score of 670 or less would default. The bond deal closed in November 2018 and took almost a year to complete. The deal clearly demonstrated the difficulty in obtaining funding for student loan programs and the severe restrictions placed on our ability to pledge loans. Allowing the office to pledge the annual appropriation may help to ease the concerns of the rating agencies regarding the riskier pool of loans pledged. A bad debt reserve like this could be utilized to expand the program to people who didn't complete and earn a credential. This can be a higher risk population, since they may not have the earning capability of those who earned a credential. Because of the stringent requirements of our bond issues, along with the requirement for the program to be self-sustaining, we have and would move conservatively in establishing and changing our credit standards. With that, I'll turn it back over to Representative Hewitt.
Okay. Representative Hewitt.
Madam Chair, we stand for questions.
Okay. Do members have questions?
I just wanted to make a quick comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much, Representative Hewitt. I just wanted to share a little bit of my personal experience. Like, I have two sets of loans. One is from probably like the early 2000s, and one is more from like 2008, 2009. And when I actually got into a position where I could start more kind of seriously paying them down, I noticed that like my old loan is the interest rate is almost 7%, and my new ones are like two point something. And I asked my lender if they could, or they're a servicer now. It's like, you know, it's been transferred five times to different people. If I, like, is there any way that I can preferentially pay down that higher rate loan? And they told me no, that they have to, any money I send them, they have to do it over each loan gets like a little section of it. And so. So, you know, 6.8%, like, I have a car note that I pay 2% on. So that's, I mean, and this is a loan from the government. It's three times my private loan that I have from a lending institution. And so I tried to apply for refinancing because it seemed like, you know, at that time when I was looking into it, like, I could have gotten it down considerably and I didn't I didn't meet the credit and debt to income ratio needs. And at that point, I was actually, you know, I was making 50 grand a year or whatever, like a decent middle class living. And so I'm just really, you know, I think I'm 37, so I'm kind of in this like age of like people who maybe there was more awareness after I went to school about this issue. But, you know, I think a lot of folks my age are in my situation, which is like I can't afford to buy a house because me and my, you know, partner have all this debt that we're trying to pay down. And so I'm just really thankful to you for bringing this forward and kind of expanding it out a little bit further, because this really, you know, to the testifier's point, does have, or actually it was our previous on Representative Pryor's legislation. A lot of people my age are making different decisions about their lives based on this issue. So it really makes a difference, and I thank you for that.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Gomez, thank you.
Hewitt.
And again, one of the things that I thought was neat about this, and one of the other complicated issues with a lot of these student loans, is our parents, a lot of the parents are on these loans, and they're holding up their own personal lives to move forward. This program would allow them to get off the loans and help them go somewhere else, possibly to spouses and stuff. So it sounds funny, but it's true. I mean, this is really where we're at.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize if you covered this in your comments about the bill. I was doing a little reading here, so I may have missed it. But can you just speak on how the program operates currently without this bad debt reserve account? I mean, can you just jog my memory? Were there general fund dollars that went into this program to help it out? Can you just speak on that a little bit?
Ms. Kozier.
Madam Chair, members, the program is, again, self-sustaining, so it operates based on the interest that students pay in when they repay their loans. So that has established our existing bad debt reserve. But because, again, we rely on what the students pay, that also has to cover our defaults for the program, which is why, again, we're very conservative. So this special bad debt reserve would allow us to lend, we'll say, to a little riskier population.
Thank you.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to, if I can make a comment first, just to reiterate what we're saying. The example of parents on their students' loans, I mean, I talk to those people in my district, and they want to remodel their house, and they couldn't, and they wanted to take out a loan for that, and they had to pay a higher interest rate, not because of their debt, but because they were a co-signer on someone's loan. So I know that this is actually an economic development. It's affecting our economy right now, the amount of student debt that we have in Minnesota, which is either fourth or fifth, depending on how you measure it. So it is a significant issue. And I'd like to ask a question that perhaps you can't, I understand you can't, may not be able to answer, but if you can talk around it a little bit for me, I would appreciate it, which is the numbers of people that we might be able to, that we're working with now, and how we might be able to increase the number of people that we're working with their debt right now. Any ideas of numbers? And I know it's a tremendously popular program, and that when it first came out, the phone was just ringing off the hook, but people wanted to find out more.
Ms. Kosher.
Madam Chair, members, what we did is we estimated our average loan right now has been in the neighborhood of $35,000. So we looked at that with a $25 million annual appropriation, we could, it's a $5 million bad debt reserve, but we're estimating we would make $25 million worth of loans, which would come out of our own funds, that we could do about 750 loans per year. Again, that's assuming that it was at the average, which we've seen, of $35,000 per borrower.
Right. Were there any other members that wanted to? Okay. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. the default rate, I mean, the Pell Grants are not, it's not possible to default on them, but apparently the state grant program you can default on, and what would be the circumstances?
And Ms. Grimes.
Tricia Grimes with the Office of Higher Education. Pell Grants and state grants are not loans. They are grants. They do not have to be repaid.
but there are federal loans that many people have. And I believe Minnesota's default rate, they do a three-year default rate. The percent of borrowers who default on their loans in the first 3 years after they were supposed to begin repayment was about 8%. And it's in Minnesota's somewhat low default rate compared to other states. But there were about 12,000 Minnesotans who defaulted on student loans in the last year for which there is data. Many of those defaults could have been prevented if the borrowers had understood their options. The default rate we have on self loans is actually computed differently. It's on the whole life of the loan, the whole 20 up to 20 year life of the loan, and it's quite low. Marilyn, what is it?
Disclosure.
Madam Chair, members, the default rate for the self loan program is roughly about 6%, and then we do our own collections, and we also have the Department of Revenue collect, and we get the default rate down to less than 2%, and that is for our self program. Because the refi program is relatively new, we don't have a good history on what the default rate will ultimately be.
Okay, thank you very much.
Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions. Without this bill, we can make the maximum amount of loans refinanced can be $100 million, right?
Yes.
And so with this bill, it goes up to $125 million. And I'm just confused because it says that we're going to contribute $5 million in fiscal year 2020 and $5 million in 2021. That's just $10 million more. So wondering how the math works.
Madam Chair, so the original loan capital that is loaned to borrowers came from state revenue bonds. Okay, so they sell the revenue bonds, and that's sold in the municipal bond market, basically. What Ms. Kozer was referring to by saying we could do $25 million, we assume that many of the borrowers who would refi out of this new pool of somewhat riskier borrowers would be just fine at repaying. So we think we could make $25 million worth of loans based on a $5 million bad debt reserve, because we won't have to assume that they would all default.
Okay, Madam Chair, one more question on that then. So it sounds as though the bill is really to help expand the program to a higher risk pool. So my second question is, what's the average interest rate students are paying when they refinance, and will the higher risk student pay a higher interest rate?
Ms. Kozer.
Madam Chair, members, we do not charge interest rates based on the risk of the borrower, so we are not using FICO scores similar to what private lenders do. So the interest rate, borrowers have the option to select between a fixed and variable 5, 10, and 15 year, depending upon what they qualify for based on their debt-to-income ratio. So currently, between our fixed and variable rate, it ranges from 4.25% to 6.75%. And we have seen private loans over 13% that have been refinanced into our program. So it's not a matter of